Welcome everyone to the season preview call with Dwayne Ford and Marshall Ferguson. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Lucas Barrett. Please go ahead, Mr. Barrett.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 2018 CFL Draft Call. Today we're happy to have TSN draft expert Dwayne Ford, who will be covering the CFL draft for the 14th time in his career. We are also joined by TSN 1150 host and CFL.ca insider Marshall Ferguson on the call today to chat about Thursday's 2018 CFL draft. Dwayne and Marsh will take questions regarding the draft from team needs, questions about specific prospects, and everything in between. Please note the CFL draft will be televised beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday on TSN and RDS, and we'll approximately have the first two rounds on TSN, and then we'll move to tsn.ca/tsngo at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For media who have questions, please press star 1 on your keypad. I'd like to turn over the phone to the operator at this time.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you're using a speakerphone, we invite you to pick up your handset before making your selection. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participant registers for questions. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Dan Ralph of the Canadian Press. Please proceed.
Thank you. Gentlemen, let me ask you point blank. Who goes first overall, Mark Chapman or Trey Rutherford or somebody else? I'll start with Dwayne, please.
For me, I have Mark Chapman going first overall. I see that there are a lot of fits, obviously, for the team that has the first overall pick, that there are a lot of needs there, and in a lot of ways you can kind of think in terms of best available, et cetera. I think when you look at this draft class, Chapman ranks as certainly among the guys who will be ready to play the earliest, you know, among the most pro-ready guys in it, and therefore able to make, I mean, even the word impact, I think, is sometimes too strong when you talk about the Canadian draft, but we'll use it anyway, as a guy who has a chance to make the most immediate impact among players in this draft.
Thank you. How about you, Marshall?
Yeah, I think that there's a good point there by Dwayne. There's a lot of different areas that the Alouettes can go to, and certainly Mark Chapman has earned the right to be in that conversation. I honestly think the Alouettes probably have a bigger hole at receiver than they do at offensive line, but I go offensive line with it. I go Trey Rutherford just because I really do think that his size, his strength and mobility, and the way that he's been able to play a variety of positions at UConn, plus, of course, the fact that it came out with Farhan Lalji reporting that he's decided to go with, focusing on the Canadian Football League reportedly, is, I think those things all in combination just give him the upper hand. But, again, there's really no wrong pick if you're the Alouettes in that spot. They don't have a pick again in the rest of the first or the second round. So whatever they pick here, they have to feel pretty strongly about.
And just to follow, I guess the fact that both of these guys don't have NFL contracts or NFL minicamps holding them back, they're going to be much easier to sign upon draft day.
Dwayne? Yeah, that's certainly what you anticipate, right? It's a little bit of the known, and I think sometimes it's not even so much about how smoothly the contract negotiations are going to go, because you don't necessarily know that, but just just the fact that you know that they're going to be available for training camp at the very least.
I'll add as well, I think I saw Justin Dunk from 3 Down reported this morning that you have a minicamp trial for Mark Chapman. So he's going to be with the Giants. But, again, there's been a lot of guys because of the Western connection that Dwayne knows so much about there with Kevin Abrams. I think he'll go to the Giants minicamp like so many guys have and get work experience but still be readily available and probably be just as easy to be able to sign just like Rutherford would be.
Great. Thanks, Jens.
Thank you. The next question is from Murray McCormick of Regina Leader Post. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this. You're going to make a lot of us look a lot smarter in the next couple of days with this information. Dwayne, maybe you can help me out. Can you list a couple of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders priorities and maybe who you might see filling out in the draft? Maybe you and Marshall can answer the same question too, please.
For me, I look a little bit at Chris Jones' history, and I think with Chris, it's often not so much about positions and needs at positions as it is acquiring the best athletes and then basically looking to get your best seven or more, if it warrants, Canadian starters on the field. And so I look at Saskatchewan. I mean, there are a lot of positions where there's a need. Obviously, they could use some depth along the offensive line. They've taken a little bit of a hit there over the last few years. They got some help on the defensive side of the ball, particularly with the arrival of Zach Evans. That's one that's going to help them over on that side. But I think honestly, when you look at Saskatchewan, you look at Chris Jones' history, I don't think he's going to get caught up too much in positional needs, as he's going to look at getting the best athletes he can and then figuring out, kind of doing the puzzle and figuring out, how do I get my best seven athletes on the field?
Yeah, I agree with the athlete thing. And I also think from Chris Jones, what we've seen since at least I've been covering it, which is a heck of a lot shorter time than Dwayne, but it's just the mentality. Like, I feel like Chris Jones just grasps for mentality. And so in my mock draft that's up on CFL.ca today, I have him taking Godfrey Onyeka in the first round because he's brash, he's angry, he's physical, and I think that he just helped make his way onto a roster and make people feel uncomfortable by how hard he wants to play and how bad he wants to make a roster. And so that, to me, just screams a Chris Jones type of guy. But again, in terms of positional need, it's going to be whatever fits that mentality, and then they'll find a way to make it work.
Just my other question. How do you think the Riders have a number of late draft picks? How do you think this draft is going to help fill out teams from that based on the guys in the middle rounds, the middle of the middle rounds? How is this draft shaped up? Dwayne?
You want to take that first, Marsh?
Yeah, no worries. So it's a pretty deep draft across the offensive line, because I think I don't know if Dwayne agrees on this necessarily, but it's a deeper offensive line draft than we saw last year. Like, there's legitimately 10-plus guys, I think, that will be taken throughout this thing, and probably even higher than that. I think through my mock draft, when I went through it, I had somewhere up around 14 to 16 that are legit top 69 prospects when it comes to the offensive line. So I think that'll be available. It might be a little thinner at receiver the deeper you get through the draft, and same thing with defensive line. It seems like it's a bit of a smaller group across the defensive line this year. But the back end of my draft, just Murray, in case you're looking for a couple of names there, I had Atlee Simon at Regina just as a running back to kind of throw into the fire because he's a local guy but plays pretty well. And then I've got Tristan Korinkiewicz, who is the defensive lineman from Sask, and then Brock Makarik in case there was a receiver spot that was just kind of not a throwaway pick, but some name that you might want to know that's somebody that kind of fits that bigger school mentality of larger physical receiver, go get the football kind of thing. But I think there's enough names, there's enough talent definitely in the back ends of the round to get value.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the help. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. The next question is from Tim Baines of Post Media. Please proceed.
Gentlemen, thanks for doing this first. I want to ask you both, red-black specific, maybe needs. And with the exception of 1 year, they've gone offensive line first round. Could this be a year they maybe deviate, maybe a defensive back, or is 4 too high a pick for that?
As I look at it, I don't think it's too high a pick. I've been one that has touted from the time the Red Blacks entered the league the fact that they have built this offensive line on first round picks. Obviously, it's probably as prevalent a trend as there is with any team in the Canadian Football League. You look at this draft, yeah, obviously there is a lot of talent at the top end in terms of the offensive line group. But as Marshall was just saying, with reference to Saskatchewan, there is enough depth that I think when you look at a team like Ottawa that seems somewhat set in terms of their Canadian starters on the offensive line, that when you're looking to add depth, you don't necessarily have to go there in the first round, that you're going to be able to get guys who are going to make rosters, be developmental guys and so on. You're going to be able to get those guys a little bit later. So I do think it is a year where you could see them stray from the trend. And, and as you said, I mean, it's probably very uniquely, when you consider supply and demand and so on, next to the offensive line, the defensive back group is probably considered the next strongest group in this draft. And it would be a reasonable year that if you want a guy at that spot, good year to go get one.
Yeah. The defensive back group to me, Tim, is like Dwayne was just saying, it's pretty special. When I actually looked at the size and speed numbers to kind of get a sense for what type of group it was. Like, they are bigger and they are faster than the average groups over the last 6 years or so. And so, and it's right across the board. And honestly, a bunch of them are OUA guys too. Like, between Isaiah Guzlay-Mesum out of Laurier, think he's a possibility for a top.
Sorry, I think we may have lost. We disconnected with Marshall. We'll have him circle back on. Can we go to the next question, please?
Certainly. Thank you. The next question is from Mark Steven of CHQR Radio Calgary. Please proceed.
Yeah, Dwayne. Mark Steven here. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing, Mark?
Good. Just one thing I wanted to bounce a couple of names off you. First of all, from a Stampeder viewpoint, they've got a history of selecting a lot of good linemen but not keeping them around. A, do you agree that's probably their top need? And when you look at their position number 8, although they could trade, probably two guys that jump off the board are Neville from Nebraska and Ryan Sevier from the U of C. Just thoughts on their weaknesses and then those two players, just a quick thought on them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do think offensive line has to be considered a priority for the Stampeders, given the way that they've sort of structured their roster, the way that they historically have deployed their ratio, so to speak, in terms of what have been their Canadian versus American positions. You've obviously still got the flexibility that a guy like Alex Singleton gives you on the defensive side of the ball, but you lose the Canadian running back from John Cornish to Jerome Messam on the offensive side. So there's not quite the same flexibility that they have had. You know, and as you alluded to, you look at Calgary with the offensive line. Obviously, most recently, we've seen the retirement of Pierre Lavertu, who was a first-round pick for them. Carl Lavoie, another former first-round pick for them, retired. We saw Dan Federkyle, a longtime starter for them, retire. And, you know, the one that kind of gets forgotten, because it's been a couple of years now, Brander Craighead, another first-round pick on the offensive line who, due to concussion issues, had his career shortened. And so this is a team that has done very well on the offensive line in terms of developing guys like Brad Erdos and Shane Bergman. They've been very fortunate that some of those picks have been, you know, later guys who have panned out exceptionally well for them. But they've been hurt on the offensive line by some of these early retirements. And so I think it's easy to envision them looking in that direction to kind of try to replenish their depth. David Neville, obviously a massive body, a guy who played at University of Nebraska. When you go back to, you know, I guess he would have been the 2013 recruiting class. This is a kid who was considered the number one recruit in Canada coming out of Brantford, Ontario. You know, I personally am a little wary in the Canadian Football League. When you look at the kind of defensive linemen that you're playing against, it can be a challenge for a tall offensive lineman, David Neville at a solid 6'8". You know, it can be a challenge in terms of leverage playing against the Almondo Sewells of the world, who are low to the ground and very powerful. And so it takes a unique guy with that height to be able to match up, particularly if you don't necessarily have the athleticism to play out at tackle and you're going to get forced inside. So, I mean, that's the thing that I see as a bit of a challenge for David. Obviously, he's played it at a high level of competition. You know, big body, long arms, et cetera, are things that you would consider certainly his advantages as an offensive lineman coming into this draft. But I'm just not convinced in the Canadian Football League that he's going to be able to play out at tackle. And, you know, not necessarily a lot of tall guys have had the same success as Matt O'Donnell in Edmonton playing on the inside. Ryan Sevier is your classic University of Calgary offensive lineman. You know, you'll get a lot of other offensive linemen that will come in and may, you know, look the part a little bit more, maybe slightly more athletic and so on. When you do the eyeball test, sometimes with the University of Calgary guys, you just see a big body, you know, with him, Darius Sirocco this year. You look back last year, Braden Schramm, Jordan Filippelli. You know, not necessarily your most chiseled guys on the offensive line, but once that you get to the one-on-one portion of the combine, you see that these are guys who have been very well coached, are technically very sound, and, you know, and can play. They're ready to play football.
Good. We'll wait and see how it comes together. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Once again, please press *1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. Please note that Mr. Marshall Ferguson has now rejoined the conference. The next question is from Lloyd Ulrich of TSN Radio Vancouver. Please proceed.
Gentlemen, thanks again for doing this. A couple for you guys, if I would. I wonder if either of you have looked at the four drafts that Ed Hervey did in Edmonton to give us any sort of idea as to what he'll do for the Lions this year.
Well, my number one thing when I look at Ed's history, Ed's mentality and style, you know, we talked about Chris Jones with kind of the elite athletes, the explosive athletes, and that's one of the things that Chris very much looks for. You know, I think one of the things that stands out when you look at Ed's history is he's looking for size and he's looking for physicality. And that, you know, that's kind of been his background. Those are the nature of the drafts and free agent signings that led up to Edmonton's Grey Cup championship a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and for me, Lowell, I think you know just as well as anybody that offensive line has got to be the thing that they start to attack and shape up out there. So I don't know necessarily if you can look back at what Ed Hervey did in Edmonton that'll give you the biggest sense of what he's going to do moving forward. And I don't even know necessarily if there's a ton of guys in the league that you could do that too, because I think they do look at this in kind of an individual nature, even though they have certain benchmarks that they want to hit. But I just think I'd be very surprised if the first two picks at 3 and 12 for the Lions aren't offensive line, and then probably a couple of developmental picks at the back end of the draft as well, because they've got, I mean, every team's got spots they want to improve national depth, but offensive line is the thing. It might be, if you're to pick one team and one positional group that's going to focus on trying to fix up this year, I would say Lions offensive line is the thing in this draft.
Have a book on is Rashawn Simonize. Anyone know?
I actually really like Rashawn Simonize. My concern, I guess, coming out of the combine was route running, because I think if you put him side by side on the combine film or just in game film playing with Okanagan, the book on him for me is that he's just not the route runner that those other guys that are available in the draft are, whether it's Dan Peterman or Mark Chapman. So he's not a bad receiver by any stretch of the imagination. I feel like we probably overrate him a little bit because of the Cincinnati Bengals experience that he had and how long he's had to wait and the potential that he's got and his body style. But I just don't know if he's going to fill out much more than he already has, because there's some concern about whether or not he can actually put weight on, and the fact that he kind of gets jammed up on film in CJFL games against those defensive backs in junior football where he can't get off the ball. He's going to get worked over physically in any training camp, preseason game, or regular season game by physical DBs, that whether we're playing press on him or not, they're gonna try to work him physically. So I think that's going to be his biggest struggle, honestly. Is if you put him on the outside and let him go for a run, then he'll probably be okay. But if he's trying to run kind of precision routes, then it's going to be tough for him.
And Dwayne?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing when I look at Rashawn, I don't know if it's so much a case of being overrated as almost people are hung up on what the excitement was a couple of years ago. You know, this is a kid who very quickly became an All-Canadian in a University of Calgary offense. It was a little bit of a relay team, and he is a prize guy. You're talking about a receiver, 6'4", 6'5", and fast. You know, I mean, a guy that can blaze. But the thing that stands out for me is you're talking about a guy who missed his last year of college football and then had his draft year deferred. And so he's very raw. Like where you know, I mean, Marshall mentions guys like Mark Chapman, Daniel Peterman. Those are guys who have played a lot of football in the last 4 years and have developed. And I think the challenge with Rashawn is that you feel a little bit like there's been a kind of a stagnation over the last 2 years where he hasn't been at the University of Calgary. Yes, he's been in the Cincinnati Bengals training camp. Yes, he's played junior football for Okanagan. But I think from kind of a developmental point of view, it's not the same. And so I also think I think a lot of people felt you would see this guy come into the combine maybe being a little bigger and stronger from the premise that, I mean, he's essentially had an extra year of just getting ready for this draft. And, you know, and the fact that he is, and I think that that's a concern to some teams. On a positive note, I do think that a lot of people see a guy who's more mature now than he was a couple of years ago, just in terms of decision making and focus and so on. But, you know, I mean, when you compare, as most people will, among the receivers, you're going to compare Simon Eyes to Mark Chapman. Chapman is your finished product. Rashad Simon Eyes is all kinds of untapped potential. And that's kind of what you're drafting, and recognizing that he's not as far along that developmental curve as you maybe might have hoped, and as he looked like he might have been a couple of years ago. But, you know, you get him in the right system with the right coaches, with the right veteran guys, and there is a world of potential there.
Great.
Thank you. The next question is from Tim Baines of Post Media. Please proceed.
Sorry, guys, my phone cut out on me before, just when Marshall's cut out, too. I wanted to ask you specifically, I heard some of the answer about the Red Blacks and maybe with their first pick, but maybe overall needs for them. And I want to ask you specifically both about Jackson Bennett, where you see maybe him slotting out in the draft.
Yeah, you go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead. Okay. So for me, I would say, like, overall, in terms of kind of the way that this will play out for the Redblacks, like, Dwayne talked, I think, perfectly about the good job that they've done building their offensive line out and the success that they've had with it. So I think they can afford to take kind of a futures offensive line pick if it's one of those guys that has a rookie minicamp invite, because there are so many of them that have an opportunity to be able to do that this year, it seems like, because it is such a deep group. So I wonder if, like, Neville might be a name like that that is probably going to come up here. Whether or not he ends up being successful, a guard or a tackle like Dwayne already talked about, I guess, is a different question. But and then in terms of Jackson Bennett, when you're looking outside of your team-specific needs and stuff, I actually find a lot of similarities between Tunde Adeleke from Carlton and him, who you'll know really well, Tim, of course, from last year's process and going to Carlton and having a good rookie season. Like, to me, Jackson Bennett is kind of that hybrid that can roll down into the box and become kind of an off-the-edge blitzer if he needs to from a free safety spot, or can get sideline to sideline, has pretty good range, has good hands, and has return game ability. So I think Jackson Bennett, between all of the guys that have, you know, signed those rookie minicamp deals or that are getting undrafted free agent status, I think Jackson Bennett's just going to keep sliding closer and closer towards the top of the draft because he's too good not to. Like, after coming out of the combine, I'd be shocked if he's not a first-rounder.
Yeah, I agree very much in terms of Jackson Bennett as a guy who I think really opened some eyes. You know, we mentioned the depth of the DB class here. Explosive athlete, a guy who offers some versatility. I think that's one of the things when you talk about Canadian Football League defenses and that multiplicity, the ability to move guys around to different positions, whether they're going to be lined up at free safety, whether they're going to be lined up at nickel or will linebacker and do different things. Jackson Bennett to me is a guy who can fit into that mold. So a guy who can be more than just a special teams guy, quite frankly. But as a young guy coming into the league, I think body type wise, you definitely have that. You know, you talk about the overall needs, I guess, for Ottawa going into this draft. You know, again, offensive line becomes maybe not quite as pressing, especially knowing that there's some depth there and you can fill a little bit later. They've got some depth on the defensive line, but I could see if there's an opportunity to grab a higher end guy there, possibly a Julien Laurent, that might be a guy that they look at. You know, they've kind of filled with some veteran guys, Michael Kloss and Daryl Waad, since losing Zach Evans. But I think, you know, given some of the uncertainty, obviously Daryl Waad's had an injury history, Connor Williams has an injury history and a bit of an uncertain future, that's a consideration. And as well, again, I think once you get out of the top part of this draft, if you've got a receiver that can provide a little bit of depth and maybe compete for a roster spot, contribute on special teams, that would be a consideration as well.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. The next question is from Chris O'Leary of CFL.ca. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. A question for both of you. Yesterday, the Alouettes had said that they were open to trading the number one pick. I'm wondering if you think it's worth it to trade that away, and if it is, what kind of scenario would make that work in your eyes?
Well, I guess, I mean, the first thing is in terms of whether or not it's worth it. Obviously, that depends on what someone is willing to give. I do think that given the Alouette situation, quite frankly, where, you know, I think there's a degree of pressure to be successful this year, particularly for Kavis Reed in his second year as the general manager, that, yeah, I mean, it's very easy to look at the possibility of getting more immediate help than what you might get in the Canadian Football League draft in order to sort of expedite getting your record back on track. But I think that what you would have to look at the very least is, you know, a younger established Canadian starter plus, you know, whether it means trading down in the first round so that you're still getting a pick for the future, maybe an early second round pick. But I think that is your very minimum is, you know, at least one established starter and a relatively high pick for your first overall pick.
For me, Chris, we were actually talking about it on the Waggle yesterday with Cebulski and David Sanchez there, and we were saying, you know, if Montreal for some reason wanted to move that pick, they need something back immediately that's a starter, which would make a lot of sense to try and help themselves now. But you're also would be giving up the idea of building the future out of this draft class because, again, they don't pick after they have that first pick until 19th. And so you're going 18 spots without a draft pick there. So if you're going to trade out, that means that you're not going to be involved at all in the first two rounds. And that's a bit of a predicament to be in. And is there necessarily a player out there that you value high enough to get immediate value out of that you think can help you right now that's going to be a better player, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now than somebody that you're going to try to draft and develop, I think is a fair question as well. So I personally don't see it. I think the Alouettes would be wise to stay where they're at and take either Trey Rutherford like I have or Mark Chapman like Glenn was talking about.
Awesome. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah, and I'm just going to throw in, too, I mean, the other challenge, I mean, as, you know, it's one of those trends or just characteristics of the Canadian Football League draft. I mean, we talk about it a lot having to do with proximity or geography, teams drafting hometown guys with the knowledge that they're going to be there. You know, again, I think given the situation that Montreal is in and particularly given the situation that Kavis Reed is in, yeah, you can talk about the, you know, sort of building for the future out of this draft class, but I think it becomes a real fine line depending on how the Alouettes think they're going to do this year as to whether you are drafting for somebody else, basically. And obviously, like most of us, I want to see Kavis do well for a number of reasons and be successful there. But you just recognize that situationally, there's a certain immediacy, I'll call it, you know, a sense of urgency for Montreal.
Great. Thanks a lot, Dwayne.
Thank you. The next question is from Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for doing this again. Just to piggyback off of Chris's questions for both of you, you know, I understand the idea of Kavis Reed kind of needing results now, but what, you know, what teams do you think might be interested in moving up to that spot given their needs?
I find a lot of times that the trades in the first round, particularly in terms of moving up, it's not even necessarily as much about a positional need as opposed to really wanting a particular player. And, you know, I mean, so you look at this draft, we've talked at length, obviously, about the depth at the offensive line position there. You know, there are some pretty high-end guys and pretty high-end guys who are going to be here. You know, I mean, as much as for the time being, Ryan Hunter and Dakota Shepley, who look like outstanding prospects, are out of the mix, there are still a lot of real good players, and it speaks volumes when a kid like Trey Rutherford says, you know, forget the NFL, I'm gonna focus on the CFL. And, you know, I mean, there are others. We've mentioned David Neville, Peter Godber, other guys from the CIS ranks as well. Mark Corte, obviously, is a guy who's been mentioned in that mix. There are others we haven't talked about as much because they weren't at the combine. David Brown from Western being amongst those, Ryan Seviori from University of Calgary. There's a number of pretty good offensive linemen. I think if you start looking at teams that may have an interest in a receiver where there's not the same depth and where, you know, Mark Chapman particularly stands out, I think when you start talking about teams that might have an interest, it's probably the teams that have a little bit more of a need for a Canadian receiver. Saskatchewan is one of the teams that comes to mind with that. That doesn't necessarily have a lot of depth at the receiver spot right now. That would be a possibility.
And yeah, for me, Jeff, I would say like the offensive line I talked about earlier in DC. To me, again, it's not necessarily like Dwayne said about trading up for a specific positional need and trying to go get that one person to fill that one void, because it is so many moving pieces when you're talking about the ratio and all of that. But I would say, if there is a team that might want to try to dive up ahead, even though it would only be from 3-1, or maybe it's from 12 into the middle of the first round or something, then maybe BC would try to get up earlier to try and make a move with Ed Hervey there to kind of make a statement. And the reason that I'd say that is, like, they're playing in the ultra-competitive West, and BC's got to find a way to make their way out of the basement, and the only way they're going to do that is if they protect Jonathan Jennings. I think we all agree with that. So I think that might be a move that they could do to try and influence the roster pretty quickly.
What about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers? I mean, this is a team that, you talk about a need for Canadian receivers. This is a club that plans on starting two Canadians at receiver this year and has quite a bit of depth on the O-line. Now, I guess it's a bit of a two-part question in the sense of, where do you view the Bombers heading into this draft, and, you know, at the position of number 7th pick? And on top of that, when you have the O-line depth that Winnipeg has. I mean, you look at last year, they brought in Jeff Gray as the 8th overall pick, I believe it was. And because I know O-line, you want to stockpile. When does it become almost for Winnipeg to kind of go back to replenishing some of those O-linemen spots?
Well, I think it's very reasonable to anticipate that Winnipeg, again, this being a deep draft, whether you go early for offensive linemen or not, and obviously the future of Jeff Gray and NFL opportunities for him would factor into that for Winnipeg. But, you know, I mean, you consider this is a team that for the last couple of years has started only two Canadians on their offensive line. It depends on how they intend to go ratio wise, I think, as to how much they prioritize offensive line, but I still think that somewhere within the first couple of rounds of this draft that's a position of interest to them.
Yeah, I think offensive line, I have Mark Cordy going there out of Alberta just because I feel like he's too good to fall out of the first round, and I think he's got an opportunity to play pretty quickly there. So I got him, and then after that, like you're saying, Jeff, I think like they've set themselves up so well, I think, honestly, with national depth at a variety of positions, but including offensive line, that they can go O-line in the first round, then after that start to kind of dabble and take looks at other places. So I wonder if Marco Dubois is just a solid, really, really talented special teams guy that they can develop into a receiver after Fioli Godino is gone. So Dubois is the name at Oval that I have my eye on for Winnipeg. And then past that, basically just finding, you know, your linebackers and your running backs and fullbacks and different special teams type contributors. I don't know if they necessarily need to go out and search for a Taylor Loeffler type that's going to get in there and fight for a starting spot immediately, because they've already found so many of those guys.
It's just one last one from you guys. Every year it seems, I think of Johnny Augustine last year and just kind of guys that come in with a lot of hype and kind of fall off the board. And then there's the guys that maybe weren't really on the radar that pop up. Anyone in your guys' opinions come to mind, either going one way or the other?
I'm never going to predict anybody's demise on draft day, doing the free fall. But, you know, I do think it's a draft where there are a lot of very interesting guys who, for a variety of reasons, you know, didn't even get to the national combine and as a result of that weren't talked about. You know, I mean, again, I'll focus for starters on the offensive line position where, you know, there are guys who are going to be considered prospects that didn't attend any of the combines at all because they were recovering from injuries at that stage of the offseason. I mentioned David Brown from Western. This is a guy who has been ranked in the top 20, was the best player on a pretty good offensive line for my beloved championship, Vanier Cup championship winning Mustangs. Casey Baker at Carleton, another guy who was talked about early in the ranking process, a big body at 6'7", 310, 315, but was injured and missed the end of Carleton season and wasn't available come combine time. Kyler Cherry at Acadia, very similar story. You know, a guy coming out of the East-West Bowl last year that some people kind of had their eye on, a little bit older, as a guy who's played junior football but got injured training at the start of the offseason, wasn't available come combine time. And similarly, Ryan Bredner, maybe not quite as highly regarded, but a kid at University of Saskatchewan, one of the biggest players in this draft, you know, 6'8", you know, 330 pounds, as an offensive lineman that, you know, a guy who was injured and, again, not available come combine time. As these guys are now kind of getting healthy and teams hopefully are getting a look at them, with the draft and training camps approaching, that these are some names that you could see start to creep up a little bit, that they had been what we'll call forgotten men before, but guys that, as I said, like, I mean, we'd have been talking about these as national combine guys competing on the offensive line had they not been hurt.
And for me, in terms of the guys that I have my eye on, and honestly, I'll give you two, Jeff, and I don't want to pick a slide and a guy that's going to force his way forward, but I think these two names could go either way, and I honestly am not sure which way they're going to go. Simon Ives, we've already talked about a little bit. He's got a ton of potential, but I feel like if he doesn't find the right fit with a team or a team that really loves him and wants to develop all that potential, then I wonder if he could slide backwards. At the same time, because he has so much potential, I wonder if the team will reach for him early on. So he could go either direction to me. And then another one that's kind of like that, but for different reasons, I would say, is Regis Tibisu out of Montreal, because he is got that rookie minicamp invite with the Chicago Bears. And I feel like because he's in the unique situation of basically playing a different position in American football than he is in Canadian, where he's going to get looked at as a fullback or an inside slot back, a physical, almost like a tight end type of thing with the Bears, if they really fall in love with him and if CFL teams get word that they really like him at that spot, he might fall decently far in the draft. But at the same time, if he's deemed to be just a really physical interior slot back or maybe a positional H-back kind of guy in a CFL offense and a team loves him, then they might reach for him. So I would say Tibisu and Simon Ives would be two guys on my board that I'm wondering if a team is going to either reach for them or if they'll fall off for those two different reasons.
Great. Thanks a lot for doing this, guys. Really appreciate it.
I wanted to, we have Dwayne and Marshall for a few more minutes. Is there any more questions? Please press star one on your keypad.
We do have a question from Chris Schultz of TSN. Please proceed.
Hey, guys, first-time caller, big-time fan. Dwayne.
The feeling is mutual.
Dwayne, the worst-case scenario for a Canadian Football League team is they draft the guy and they never see him because he makes an NFL roster or he makes a practice roster in the NFL. Are teams getting better at evaluating the fit for the Canadian college athlete, whether he plays NCAA football, CIS football, and whether he's going to make it or not in the NFL, or is it still a little bit of a roll of a dice?
I think with anything, there's a bit of a gamble to it. But I think, honestly, every aspect of the CFL draft, Schultzy, I think teams have become better and more diligent at it in terms of looking after details and so on. You know, I mean, those of us who have been around long enough will point back to the days of, you know, quite frankly, a team drafting a player who had passed away. And, you know, I mean, the things like that in this day and age just aren't going to happen for a number of reasons. But, you know, a big part of that is just that teams are a lot more focused on doing their homework, you know, looking into every aspect of players' backgrounds, talking to enough people to really have, I would say, a very firm handle on what their NFL potential is and so on. And so I think that, you know, again, it will always be a gamble because you never know exactly how a player is going to fit in with a team and how they're going to do in a training camp, exactly what that team is looking for and so on. But in terms of projecting that, I think that CFL scouts and personnel guys are much better positioned to do that now than they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
One of the common threads between you and me, Dwayne, is we're both kind of anti-technology. But at the same time, is it fair to say now, because you can get film so easy, information is so transferable, that the days of not finding a talented kid are over because of technology, or is it still relevant that there are kids out there that really pop out of nowhere, and then the excuse for the scouts, they have to come up for one?
Yeah, I think that it is much harder, right, in every sport for guys to fall through the cracks, but football probably more than other sports is one that we sort of associate with that game film as an evaluation. And you see it all the way down to sort of high school and university recruiting, you know, where it used to be that recruiting for Canadian universities, you were largely limited to within your own province, and, you know, beyond that, you maybe had a little bit of a network of scouts that basically consisted of your alumni who were coaching high school somewhere. Whereas now it's very much national because, you know, coaches from coast to coast can see film on kids from coast to coast. I mean, the kids all sort of have their highlight videos and things like that posted. You know, they can communicate with people very easily to get a feel for the person that they're dealing with, and a lot of things that that didn't happen, I guess, pre-internet era. And so, you know, I think that you now, you still get guys who to an extent will fall through the cracks, but it's typically more a case of, you know, guy starts off in a college program, maybe doesn't do well in school and may end up going and playing junior football or playing in one of the indoor leagues or things like that, sort of disappearing to the minor leagues. And it may be high-end recruits that, you know, that get forgotten about, guys who are exceptional athletes. But I find a lot of times now, because sometimes I think teams are digging a little bit harder and maybe doing their homework with the college coaches to track those guys. I think because there are more of us covering the draft who will bring up those names. Like I've had times in the past where I've written articles and talked about guys who may be sleepers. And, you know, the second I post the article, all of a sudden I'm getting emails and texts from CFL guys kind of saying, hey, do you have an email address for this guy? And, you know, sort of within hours, there's been communication between team and player, and, you know, guys have sent film and so on. So it's, you know, it's amazing how the internet has changed things. Just for the record, I'm not anti-technology. I'm just anti-social media.
Okay. Have a good time on Thursday, guys. You too, Marshall.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. The next question is from Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Just came to mind. Is there anything that you think GMs can learn from what happened last year with Nate Behar? And we've seen it in other cases. You know, you pick a guy high, you have a lot of, you know, these guys aren't going to come in and make an immediate impact, and yet they want, you know, relatively big dollars to play there. Do you think anything can be learned about what happened last year and whether or not GMs are a little bit more wise when it comes to who they're dealing with after they draft?
I'll let Marshall take this one because I've been doing a lot of talking.
No, it's all good. I would just say, like, we do so much stuff in the evaluation, and, like, I do the analytics, of course, of the combine numbers, and then we both watch them and understand where they've come from and talk to coaches about them. But I think it comes down to kind of the type of person that you're dealing with to understand what your negotiation is going to be like and what type of player you're going to try to get and how long it's going to take to sign them. So I honestly, Jeff, I think that's like an individual basis team by team, because there are some teams that will put up with that to get the quality of player. Like, I think Nate Behar is going to turn into a great player, just like I think Chris Ackie is still, you know, he went through something similar, and I think he's going to continue to be a really good CFL player. But it takes a certain type of team to draft somebody that wants to be able to put up with the frustration of trying to grind their way through that in order to get the positives that are on the back end of that kind of back and forth. So I think teams are already aware of it. I think teams are already wise to it, and they know what they're getting themselves into when they deal with certain players or, you know, types of players or even types of agents that they have background with, because they deal with these guys all the time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would just tag on to that. I think very much so. I mean, teams are aware of, like, well in advance of the draft, of who each of these guys, particularly the top prospects, of who their agents are. And, you know, a lot of times there's communication with those agents more than you can imagine leading up to the draft. Sure. But, you know, I mean, they have, the teams have a pretty good idea, I think, which guys are going to be difficult to deal with. And I do think in some instances, if all things are considered equal between two prospects, yeah, I think it's not unreasonable to think that there are times when who the agent is and the associated signability of the player becomes a factor in the decision.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to return the meeting back over to Mr. Barrett.
Thank you. I would like to say thanks to Dwayne and Marshall for giving up their time today to talk about the draft on Thursday. Once again, the draft will take place on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on TSN and RDS. And please note that the audio of this call will be made available, and we will be sending the CFL draft guide later this afternoon. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. We thank you for your participation.